I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our patrons, this is your extended ad-free version of this week's show. But if you're not a patron and would like to get our ad-free extended versions, higher quality MP3s, and of course our unedited live versions, head to patreon.com/UKTech. And thank you to Steve Norton and Ian. I'm very, very excited about this in particular. No offense, Steve, but you'll see why. Nate Simpson. That's right. We have a patron called Nate.
Double Nate.
Yeah, we're double nating. Equal thanks to Steve and Nate, obviously, for joining us on our Patreon journey. To everyone else who is continuing to support us. Now, today is going to be a little bit different for a few reasons. Not all of them will be obvious. At the time we're recording this intro and our news for today, it's just before one of Europe's biggest tech conferences, Mobile World Congress, starts in Barcelona, which I'm flying out to on Sunday, which is a day or so ahead from when I'm recording this, but you'll be hearing it after the show has got underway. So throughout the program, as long as nothing goes terribly wrong with the universe, I'm going to be handing off hosting duties to my future self, like this.
Sorry, I'm just in a queue for a taxi. Do you have American Express?
Okay, wait. Right, and the other reason that today is a little bit special is because I didn't want to not do a podcast, but I also need the podcast to not encroach on the work that I'm doing with Bloomberg, obviously, at Mobile World Congress. I've decided to produce the entire thing on my iPad Pro. So even in my home studio here, I've got my microphone plugged into my iPad. It's recording. Everything I do from Mobile World Congress will be recorded and edited and produced, post-produced and published from the iPad. So it's a little bit of an experiment with myself just to see how capable some of the apps that I've now got on the iPad are in terms of me not needing to take a MacBook Pro to a conference like this. So hopefully I won't have to even take it out of my suitcase. It'll just stay in the hotel and I can do the rest on the iPad. So a little bit of an experiment there. So if you're hearing this, it all went well. If you're not hearing this, then sorry. Ian, it's time to don your weatherproof activity suit, and because we're going to climb the tree of news.
Let's ascend away.
And this week, it's not full of apples, it's full of Samsungs. What an odd tree. Now, Samsung wanted to kind of get ahead of MWC, as it tends to every year, and it showed off its latest and greatest phones, namely the Galaxy S10 family, which includes the S10e. The E stands for Essential, by the way. I've asked an executive on site about that. The regular S10 and the big all-singing-all-dancing S10 Plus. Now, I was briefed on the phone the morning before it was announced, so I did actually manage to spend a good hour with the phone. So we're going to talk a little bit about my hands-on experiences with the phone, which is Samsung's, you know, it's its new flagship. It's its main rival to the iPhone and others, of course. I think there's a lot to like with the S10 Plus. And physically, I actually found myself a bit more excited in person by this than by the iPhone XS Max, which was largely just a bigger version of the iPhone X. And firstly, there's three cameras on the back. There's a telephoto lens for close-up shots, a standard wide angle for your normal shots, which you know everyone would be used to, and then an ultra-wide lens. And I was really impressed with this. The wide angle in the room that I was in basically included everything in shot that I could see with my own eyes. So, you know, if you held the camera up next to your face, the field of view was almost exactly the same. And yet with the with the telephoto lens, there was a plant in the distance, about 15 feet away or so. And the zoom lens was able to get the majority of the plant in the picture, or rather the plant filled the majority of the screen. I actually took some video of this for Bloomberg's TikTok channel, and I'm going to include a link to that in the show notes because there's a video that we produced, which I also edited on the iPad Pro, funnily enough, as another little experiment to myself. So the cameras, three cameras on the back, and that's I found that to be really, really impressive. The other thing I noticed, in fact, Ian, do you have any questions about the three cameras?
Well, no. I mean, I'm interested to try it because obviously I want there to be a good reason for a phone to have more cameras than two, or more cameras than one, even. Now, I feel like the zoom lens on most dual camera phones serves a useful and wonderful purpose. I don't know how useful a super wide angle lens is in real life. You may want to pick up on that in terms of a disagreement.
Well, I'm actually more focused on how good quality these lenses are, which is something that's very difficult to test in a controlled demo like the one I was given.
Were you given a review sample to take away and try?
Well, I would have if I'd have gone to the evening launch event, yes, but I didn't.
Right.
So it's currently
okay.
In the post, and I won't be getting that until I'm back from Mobile World Congress.
No, I think what I was striving at more there was, will you be given the opportunity within a relatively short period of time to actually try it out in the real world? And the answer to that is yes.
Oh yeah, before the next episode goes out, I'll be taking some video, and I'm particularly interested to see how the video works on the ultra wide.
Well, can I break in here a little bit and talk about the video, because I thought that was one of the very most exciting things that they were talking about at the launch, which I streamed. I didn't watch all of it, but I caught what I could. I noticed they've done this deal with Adobe, so they're going to include a more up-to-date editing package that could actually produce some real, some proper videos. So I'm quite excited about that. And I'm also interested to hear that it works with their docking station, the Samsung DeX, it's called, which I am a big fan of, because I think it's actually a really clever way of leveraging the power of a phone and turning it into something a bit more special. It works almost as a desktop computer. I mean, obviously, you don't have quite the power, but it's enough power to get most things done.
And I'd have to jump in, because I'm surprised they did include this in the S10, because that's a feature. And, for those of you who aren't aware of what it is, you essentially can plug a desktop monitor into the phone, connect up a wireless mouse and keyboard, and there's a Android desktop interface that you can basically use as a portable PC. But it's previously been on the Galaxy Note line, which has always been the kind of the productivity, the professionals version, if you like.
I think I'm pretty sure it was on the S8.
Was it on the S8? You see, I mean, even
I'm
if it was,
sure it
I'm
was
still
because I tested it on that. Because I don't think I tested it on the Note 9. The problem with Samsung when they launch phones is that they tend not to, unless you've got a really good reason and you sort of ask very nicely, they don't tend to send the DeX station out. But I had one a while ago because I was very, very interested in there. I got sort of captivated by this idea that it could be something that you give to an employee and it is literally their whole thing. So you give them a DeX station at work, you maybe give them one for the home as well, you give them a phone, and that's it. You don't need to give them anything else. Like, I mean, okay, it's not quite a laptop, but that's by the by.
But did you like it? It keep you from using an iPad instead of a laptop, for example?
Well, as the functionality's increased, perhaps, yeah. I mean, again, it does suffer slightly from the fact that you can't run normal desktop apps on it. And I do find the Android ecosystem a little bit lacking for large screens.
Do you know what, though, actually? When I went to the briefing for the Galaxy Note 9, one of the demos that they showed off of the DeX was of the Pocket Edition of Final Fantasy 15. And seeing, although it was a mobile game, phones have such high-res screens that the games need to be made for high resolution. And so actually the game looked really, really nice on a monitor. And I thought,
yeah, they only support like 1080p or something like that, don't they, on the monitors? They may do ultra-wide now, but it's no problem at all. For a phone to run at 1080p is, it's like a bit of a rest for most mobile phones these days.
Yeah. But you were reasonably impressed with that. So that seems like something that you're excited using on this phone, maybe?
Yeah, and I'm interested, because I think that video editing app, if it works like a desktop app on the phone for editing video, you know, plug in a DeX station and you've got yourself a pretty nifty little sort of mobile production facility there. Like, okay, I will admit that it's not ideal that it has to be plugged into a monitor, but say, for example, if you were going to Mobile World Congress, a lot of hotels these days have a TV with an HDMI socket. So you could theoretically connect a DeX station up to those TVs and use it and, you know, put yourself together some videos, you know, in your hotel room of an evening after attending the show. For things like that, I just think this is a really great idea. And, you know, forget everything else that, you know, Samsung tries to push as being innovative and all that kind of stuff. And there's plenty of good stuff in this phone. I just think that is a really interesting direction that everyone else just seems to have ignored.
Well, you were speaking about video, and when you started talking about video, what I actually thought you were going to interject with was the image stabilization that is included in the S10. Because, I mean, I didn't see a live demo of it. I saw a demo of it on screen. So take this for what it is, you know, the very controlled demonstration. But it, you know, they swear that it hadn't been altered. And if it hasn't been altered at all in post-processing, really, really looks very good. I mean, they showed some kids like filming on skateboards in a street, and the difference was staggering. I mean, I don't think you'd get the same level of smooth from anything less than a pretty decent Steadicam rig. And at the time I watched it, I was like, meh, yeah, whatever, fair enough, that's okay. But I mentioned earlier that I was shooting some video for Bloomberg from this event. What it was actually for was our TikTok channel, which is like very social. It's very much younger audience. And actually, they prefer things to be shot on phones rather than on professional equipment, because it looks a little bit more raw, a bit more live. So I was filming the video that I did that on my iPhone. And when I was editing it, even though the iPhone has image stabilization for video, I found myself thinking, oh, I might need to run this through a stabilization filter before I finish with it, because it was smooth, but I don't have the steadiest hand in the world, and I think you could just about tell that I was holding the phone with one hand to film and holding the Samsung device in front of me. And so I'm actually more excited by that than maybe I otherwise should have been, but perhaps for more professional reasons, using it as a source of video rather than, you know, just to keep my selfies a bit more stable. But that's definitely something we're going to be testing, and we'll give a final verdict on that maybe next week or the week after, time depending. One of the other things I noticed is that, like the iPhone XS Max, the phone doesn't actually feel as big as you'd expect from hearing it have a 6.4-inch screen. The bezels are absolutely tiny. They're really nicely curved around the edge. But the thing is, what they've done with the screen, unlike the previous models, is they've not given it a notch in the front for the cameras to poke out of, like the iPhone has, which sits in the like in the middle top little portion of the screen. What they've given it is like a hole punch effect. So it's as if you got the phone and put a hole punch in, like you were, you know, punching through some paper and punched a hole right through the screen. They talk about it being cut out with a laser to manufacture it. So it's not even that far reaching to say it is a hole punch. It's a polo mint effect. And I didn't like the asymmetry that created, even though it makes the overall device, I think, feel smaller than you would expect it to feel. And I'm not convinced everyone's favorite apps are going to deal with it super well. I mean, in my hands-on demo, you know, we couldn't download any apps that weren't already on the device, and all the, you know, pre-loaded apps did kind of look fine. I wasn't a massive fan of the calendar app, mostly because it's just a huge span of white, and so it was really obvious to me that there was this weird off-center hole punch sticking out the top right-hand corner. But everyone kind of got used to it with the iPhone, so I assume everyone will get used to it on something like this. And it's not the
But the iPhone's is in the middle, and it's, and like you said, it's symmetrical. There is a beauty to symmetry that I don't think is it's not, you can't forget about that. I suspect we'll get used to it. I'm always quite refreshed by the hole punch, in that I guess it's a smaller space to use up, and that there is some value to that.
And that's it. And the value really does come across, because the screen on this thing is gorgeous. You know, they're talking about it having HDR 10 plus. Again, we couldn't really test much of that in the room, but it's a beautiful AMOLED screen, so you kind of know what those look like. It's like the last one, but a bit better, except that now it's got a hole punch in the corner. But so there's a third thing that I really liked about S10, and this is the last kind of key feature I wanted to go through because it's the last thing that I was able to physically, you know, test myself, was the fingerprint reader, which is embedded under the screen itself and uses an ultrasound to make an image of your finger. And it was explained to me that what it does is it fires pulses of ultrasound, and it creates a map of the actual ridges in your thumbprint or your fingerprint, rather than taking a very accurate image. It's taking that that reading in a very three-dimensional way, and because it's behind the screen, you cannot tell it's there. We had a demo, and you know, we configured a thumb on the screen and then tested it, and it worked flawlessly. It worked exactly as you would expect it to work on a traditional fingerprint sensor. But and you know, it's not as dramatic as when you remember when the iPhone got rid of physical keyboards and just said, well, a keyboard will appear on screen when you need one and it'll be used for something else when you don't need it. I think this thumbprint is like in the same family of features as that. But the fact that it worked so well kind of gave me hope that maybe not too far down the line, someone's going to figure out, pardon me, how to hide cameras behind an OLED screen somehow and make these notches we've been talking about a thing of the past. I think it's a long way away.
They have a patent for that, you know. Samsung's working on putting a camera behind. It won't be a fully functioning screen. It'll be a sort of something that they'll probably use for, like, statuses or something like that. I don't really know what the point of it is.
Well, I can tell you the point of it, because people want bigger screens in smaller devices.
Yes.
And they've got so close with this one.
Yes, but, I mean, really, are you going to... If there was a black bar at the top, is that really the end of the world? Like, this
mate,
is what I don't
mate,
get.
Mate. Let's take a step back here and just appreciate the first world problem that this is.
No, it's not the end
of the world, because all of these things are tiny little incremental improvements.
But, I mean, virtually nothing we talk about matters in the grand scheme of things. It's first world problems is, you know, it's not a thing for us. We have to just focus on the fact that we talk about tech and what we do and do not like. I don't mind the way the iPhone implemented it. I don't mind hole punches. I don't mind the notches on most phones. I can see there's a point of them. Where I get slightly antsy is if there's still a bezel on, and a lot of phones do still have either a chin or a forehead, even though they have a notch. Now, Samsung hasn't done that. Samsung, as always, has sort of pushed the envelope, done the best it possible can with the screen to body ratio, and I think it looks very impressive. I mean, I have only seen photos of it. Would it matter to me if they got rid of the hole and just had a camera at the top? No, it wouldn't. Honestly, if they just had some black at the top, I'd be fine. It's honestly not a problem. The hole punch feels okay, especially with the single camera on the two smaller phones, right? I think it's the slightly elongated one on the S10 Plus that I think looks a little bit weirder, but again, you know, like I don't see it as a huge problem, but you're right. The problem Samsung has is that app developers are not solely developing for the S10. They are developing for a range of phones in Android, and it's going to make their jobs very difficult. I mean, they're going to have to potentially create a bunch of different versions, or, you know, maybe detect which phone you're using and position their screen elements differently based on what they detect. But also, a lot of them just won't bother, because fundamentally this is one phone in a range of other phones, and it's probably easier for them to sort of ignore that. I don't know if Android will address that problem.
Well, I don't know. I mean, because it's not even the same size hole across the entire Galaxy S10 family. It's different on the S10e to the S10 Plus, for example. And it's one of the reasons that you do tend to find that there's a consistency with Apple's apps, because if you now, you know, if you're submitting an app to the App Store or an update to an existing app to the App Store, you have to support the full size, the iPhone with the notch, and you have to support, if it's an iPad app, you have to support the rounded corners of the bigger iPad Pro. And I think from March, they're making that mandatory, you know,
no surprise there.
So you're going to see a wave of apps that haven't been updated get updated with this all being well. But you're right. It is harder across this range.
Well, everything's harder on Android. That's why this phone has, 6 gigs of RAM? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, the S10, depending on the model, comes with up to 12 gig of RAM.
I mean, that's absolute insanity.
Yeah.
I think that that's encouraging extreme laziness in app development, frankly. And I mean, we may have talked about this before, but honestly, if you're having to put 12 gigs of RAM into a phone when most desktop computers have 8 or 16, I think there's a problem there. But
well, you say that, but I mean, there's two things here to know. I mean, firstly, this phone can have up to 1.5 terabytes of storage. It can have up to 1 terabyte internal and supports up to 0.5 terabyte extra via micro SD. But also, Samsung makes memory chips. So, it can chuck a ton of memory in this for marketing reasons alone, and it probably barely have an impact on its bottom line, which most companies can't do because they have to buy that at a premium. Actually, a funny little side note on Android that Kate, my wife Kate, pointed out to me yesterday. She uses a Galaxy Note 9, I think, and they pushed some OS update overnight, and she has an app, like a little widget app type thing at the top of the screen that displays a clock and date and some things like that. But the new update pushed another clock into the screen. So she essentially ended up with two clocks on the screen, but they were displaying different times. They were 6 minutes.
Oh.
They were 6 minutes apart. And I was like, that underscores the difference between the iPhone and Android, which is on iPhone, you'll be like, okay, here's the clock. You can't move it. You can't do anything with it. You can't change what it looks like. You can't do anything. This is it. If you don't like it, don't buy an iPhone. Whereas Android is like, here, yeah, have two clocks. Sure, they don't even have to be the same time. They don't have to look the same. Do whatever you want. And that's great.
There are some times when you see it on iPhone, though. Like, you will notice from time to time that you'll open an app and it will shift the clock. Now, I don't know if that's an iOS feature or if it's something that is tied to apps. But I have noticed, I think it's something like Twitter. You open it and you'll sometimes see that there is a brief moment where there are kind of two clocks on screen while it rejigs itself and you know, removes the standard clock and replaces it with the app clock. I don't know. I can't tell you how it works. I don't know what the point of it is. But it's, you know, the iPhone is not flawless in that regard. I mean, it might be slightly less hackable in, you know, terms of what you give power to developers to do, but it still has some quirks.
One of the other things I wanted to mention, Ian, is I did technically get to go hands-on with Samsung's 5G phone, and this is the Galaxy S10 5G. So this is the fourth and final member of the S10 family. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, you wouldn't be able to tell it was a 5G phone except for the fact that it says 5G on the back. And in this briefing that I was in, it was hilarious. Like, you know, there's probably about maybe 15 members of the media and some broadcast, as you know, and print and online, and everyone was there, and all the cameras everywhere straight away. No one was looking just at the regular S10 that everyone's actually going to go out and buy. It was, we have to photograph the back of this phone because this phone says 5G on it. It was brilliant. You couldn't use the 5G because there is no 5G network to use. And the phone itself was locked, and the person with the passcode didn't have the lock to unlock it, which meant that the screen deactivated after every 3 seconds. So you could see all these people trying to photograph it, just quickly jumping in, pressing to activate the screen and running back so their photographer could zoom in on it. But it is there, and I was told the following, that it's coming out in Korea and the US first, and that'll be early summer, Q2, but it will definitely come out in the UK this year, and EE definitely will have it on 5G this year. So that is good news for us. For people who are really looking forward to this, don't be disappointed that it'll come out in the US first and think that we're behind. We are, I am told, on good authority, going to have the phone. It is going to be here. It is going to be this year. I think EE actually said 16 cities are going to have 5G this year, 15 or 16, and it is going to be available on those. We don't know how much it's going to cost, I don't think, on the network, but it is going to come here.
I think it's going to be quite a bit, but I don't think that's a concern, frankly. I think it'll be subsidized down because EE is going to be charging more on a monthly basis anyway. So, and I think they all will. So honestly, I'm not I don't think the price is so much of an issue. What I was more interested in is how big is it? Does it feel like a worse phone? Is the battery life going to be worse? It doesn't sound like that's the case.
The entire opposite. I mean, I did play with it. I mean, it's a fully functioning phone. It is bigger. I think it's like 6.7 inches instead of 6.4. It's got four cameras on the back because one of them is like a depth lens as well. It's also got, what's the other thing it had? The battery's bigger. It's definitely a bigger battery. It's got faster charging. I'm just trying to remember what I talked to their executive about, because I was trying to get this out of him, what else it's got, and some other stuff. But 5G is the big one, and it'll probably be very expensive because the networks are going to want to charge a premium as well to get some money back for their investment.
Yeah.
But yes, and we, at the time we're recording this, we're expecting Huawei to announce its 5G phone. So with a bit of luck, we can cut to me now in the future. Yes, well, the time travel did work. I am here in the future speaking to you from MWC Barcelona 2019, and I'm actually standing on the outskirts of Huawei's stand, where I've managed to persuade them to let me not only see the folding Mate X phone, but also get hands-on with it. I've been told that I'm allowed to describe what I'm seeing, but if I was to do any video, I'm not allowed to actually film myself holding it. So I'm going to do my best to describe what I can see, and I imagine I'll be surrounded by several people making sure I don't do anything I'm not supposed to. So I'm going to head on in now, and let's see what we get. So I'm here in Huawei's booth looking at the Mate X, the folding phone. My friend here from Huawei is showing this off to me. So the first thing that stands out, I think, actually, is that the display doesn't look like a folding display. It doesn't look like, there's no evidence on the edges of sort of any kind of crease or evidence of it having been folded back and forth several times. Can you fold it out? Do you have to press a clip to release it or anything?
Yeah,
or do you just...
Not.
So there's a little clip on the back, and you press that, that releases it, and it pops up, and then you just fold it out. So can I hold it?
Yes.
I'm not taking video. We're not allowed to take video if I'm holding it, but I can describe it while I'm holding it. So I'm looking at a web page now in Chrome, and yeah, you really can't tell that this folds in half, can you? This is just, it's as if this is an 8-inch tablet.
Yes.
Show me the back. What's on the back of the device? So we have the three camera array there on the back. What's special about the cameras?
The camera is the Leica cameras, mm-hmm. and this camera, because we have the M bar design, mm-hmm. so we don't need to place the rear camera and front camera by different modules. We just use the main cameras here, and when you fold it, you can use no better for the selfie. Or also for the photo shooting for the landscape photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the phone is now folded in half. We've got the camera app loaded on the sort of the main side. I'm looking through the screen and seeing through the camera lens.
So here is a button. Yeah, okay. Yep. If we click it.
Oh, wow, look at that.
So when I take photo for you, you can tell me how to adjust it.
So after the gentleman pressed a button on the screen, what happened is the display on the back of the phone essentially shows you the selfie image. So I can see myself. I can see the same thing that you're seeing, and I can tell you, no, you've cut out my amazing hairdo. Can you make it look like I haven't been walking,
yes,
tens of thousands of steps in a conference in Barcelona, please? So what else have we got around the edges of the device? We've got the charging port, which is a fingerprint sensor as well.
Yes.
USB-C down at the bottom. And actually, if I can hold this again,
sure.
One of the things that I don't think I really appreciated was how flat it folds. Like that, it folds in half. In my hand, it feels like a regular non-folding phone.
Yes.
It's quite weighty, but in a solid sort of feeling way. I don't feel like I've got my hand technically rubbing up against the side of a folded screen. It just feels like a...
It's very comfortable hold because it's a curved panel, so you will feel very comfortable. And as you said, the gap is almost no gap. It's because the fold we can fold 180 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just hold it once more with it folded out? I'm not allowed to unfold it, right? Or am I allowed to unfold it?
No.
I'm not allowed to do the unfolding.
No, but he can unfold it.
Okay, if you can unfold it for me, because I think when I felt it before, I'm holding it in my right hand, there's kind of the, I don't want to say a bulge is a bit of a negative word, but the bit that's slightly thicker is behind my hand, and this feels like an extremely comfortable way of reading a book.
Yeah.
Or a graphic novel or something like that, because of the size and shape, the weight, the balance. This to me feels like a very, very nice way to, you know, to read a book. I could definitely see myself using this. Well, I'm back outside now after having used the Mate X for about 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes or so. And my initial impression is really, you know, having seen the Galaxy Fold, which is out on display here on the show floor as well, and having seen some of the other form factors that companies are showing off, like Sony's long, thin phone, the Xperia 1. LG also has one that's kind of like a phone with just two screens strapped into a case. The Mate X, honestly, I think it really does justify the hype. I've never seen a device like it. I was really concerned when I saw the announcement that you would be able to see evidence of the bend down the middle, you know, that the screen would be in some way affected by it. But it really isn't. When it's folded out in its 8-inch tablet form, it is very, very impressive. You cannot tell that it folds in half really in that way. And the ergonomics of it as well just made a big impact on me, because I think that one of the problems with holding like an iPad for reading is that it does feel a bit weighty. But because of the way that they've designed the chassis of the phone, and the fact that it is nicely weighted on the side that you would probably want to hold it, it's extremely comfortable, and it's actually lightweight. As tablets go, it's very, very lightweight. As a phone, it's quite heavy compared to some of the others, but as a tablet, it's very light. So I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it again when it comes out later this year. Well, on that note, I am now going to go and wander around MWC and see what else I can find to talk about. Well, you can't tell from just hearing it, but this music's actually being played by three robotic arms on ZTE's stand. There's two robots playing the piano and another one playing the drums. Doesn't look very mobile, but I suppose you could describe them as a congress of sorts. Oh, they've just finished. Are they going to take a bow? Yes, the robots are turning around and they're taking a bow. Just walking past the Samsung booth, and I can see a bunch of people jumping around inside some 10-foot sphere for some reason. It's not immediately clear why, so we can find somebody to ask about what's going on with this. These guys are a bit too busy dancing. Let's see if I can grab one of them afterwards. Hello. What? Why were you dancing in here? What is this?
This is the new Samsung Galaxy Orbit.
The Galaxy Orbit?
Yeah, because an S10 inside it goes up and then it goes down, recording a video with a slow motion.
Oh, bar. It's for recording slow-mo video. Ah, okay. How bizarre. Well, I've just been told that there's a robot around here somewhere that's got 5G, looks like a humanoid, and is serving people drinks. So I'm going to find it. Oh, in fact, I think I have just found it. Yes, here we are. Cloud Minds. Their tagline says, "Cloud robot is the killer application for 5G. I don't think putting the word robot and killer in the same sentence is a brilliant idea. Okay, there's several of these robots. There's one called Rachel, who's got a little bow on her head. Kind of looks like one of those robots out of AI or iRobot, much criticized Will Smith film, which actually I thought was excellent, and I watched it the other day. There's another one here, Kathy. What's Kathy doing? Staring soullessly at me, actually.
I am Kathy from Cloud Mind.
Oh, she's talking.
Can I help you?
Hello, Kathy. Can I have a coffee, please?
Here is your coffee. Enjoy.
She says, there is a coffee.
She's not giving it
She's not giving it to me, is she?
Hello, I'm Kathy from Cloud Nine. May I make you a cup of coffee?
Yes, please.
Yes, please wait a moment.
Ah, she's turning around. You can't see this, but in the background, there's another one of these robots doing some kind of dance. She's talking to me. Okay, her hand is going down. She's picking up the cup and she's lifting it. Is she going to turn? She is turning. This one's for me, I think.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Kathy. You're a regular barista. Oh, and it's got a picture of her on it as well. Thank you very much, Kathy. You really are a vision of the future. Well, that's the first time I've ever had a robot make me a cup of coffee and give it to me. I need to go find somewhere to sit down now and actually drink this. I think that's a good point for me to hand back to myself in the past. Back to you, me, in the past. Well, it's time to leave Mobile World Congress and dive into our mailbag. We had a great email from James Thatcher, regular listener to the show, who responded to our request to have an alternative viewpoint on Ian and I's discussion around social media and regulation and so far. He says, "Hello, gents. Perhaps it's just my bloody American ways, but is it possible that the socialistic view that both Nate and Ian have towards social media companies is taking things a tad too far? While I agree that there is such a thing as social media addiction, and I agree addiction should be fought at every chance we get, in some ways, is this not what we asked our system to provide? Did we not ask the system to give us relevant ad information? Did we not ask the system to provide us with information that we thought would be most beneficial to us? I think the real issue here is not necessarily one of the tech companies being at fault, but it's of others being able to take advantage of the company's superior algorithms. Of course, we will use a system that's most efficient in providing the results we decide are relevant. This is not addiction, it is human nature." He goes on to say, it's quite a long email, but he goes on to say, "For example, I listen to approximately 50 hours of podcasting each week. Is that addiction? No, of course not. There are some shows I skip in a given week, and some that I am subscribed from or subscribed to. But for my needs, podcasting is the best form of data input for information, entertainment, and education. To summarise, let's not confuse the method of information delivery with that of a specific individual who may need treatment for a specific, often unique to the individual, mental health issue. That's my two pence. Keep up the good work, lads." James. That is a great viewpoint. I agree with huge amounts of it. It doesn't pull me away from feeling really concerned when I walk down escalators and see people mindlessly scrolling through home screens. Or the other day when I was arriving at my train station and I saw what I think was a family. They certainly were all together, and three of the kids were only maybe 5 or 6 years old. All three of the kids had a phone they were doing something with, and both the parents had a phone that they were both doing something with. So all five of them were on their phones and not talking to each other. And sure, there's tons of reasons, and I don't want to sound judgmental. They probably had a long journey and they just want to catch up on some stuff. But there is another part of me that thinks, do you all need to be using your phone right now?
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing that stood out to me in that was, did we not ask for personalised ads? And the answer is no, honestly. I don't really want personalised ads. I can see how that benefits the companies because it generates more revenue because they're producing more accurate ads. I don't personally want any ads, but I mean, I know that's not the reality of the world.
Aren't you both right here? Like, didn't we want ads that were more relevant in the way that I don't want ads about football and I don't know what other things don't I like?
That's perhaps true, but the problem is that it very quickly went too far, didn't it? It became something where we were giving away so much information. And we have to take responsibility for that. But ultimately, we gave away too much information, and that enabled a picture of us to be built up that is too clear. And I feel like there are not sufficient controls to manage that. I'm not actually opposed to it wholesale. But what I think is it has gone too far, and it needs to be reined in. And I think that whilst I understand what he's saying, you know, about us being slightly different in outlook from a socialism and, you know, whatever point of view, I would like there to, I feel like it's necessary that we have regulation at this point. I can see why you would say that's not necessary, because actually we could demand that the companies take it into their own hands and source it out, and that's perfectly valid. If they can do that and convince us that that is no longer a problem and that we have control over what we see, and we're not being, you know, Facebook is quite famously storing a lot of information about us that it does not disclose when we ask for that information. Once they've proved that they are doing
such as what?
Well, do you not remember this story about how they allow companies to upload information they've gathered about you? So, for example, if I go to Shop A and I buy something, Shop A asks me if I'd like the receipt by email. I give them my email address, and it happens to be the same email address I registered with Facebook for. But as at the same time as I gave them my email address, I also gave them my phone number so that I could have updates on discounts. If I've never given my phone number to Facebook and that company then uploads the email address, my name and the phone number, that goes into Facebook systems, and then Facebook is then able to knows what your phone number is. So then that gives it another vector through which it is better able to track you. So, for example, you know, you could have given your another company, say Company B, just your phone number, but then Facebook knows that's you and is then able to understand that, you know, this company has dealt with you for this, this company's dealt with you for that. But that information, according to, I believe it was Gizmodo did an investigation into it, that information is not disclosed when you contact Facebook with a GDPR request. It's a very good story. I'll find it and you can put it in the show notes. But essentially, it's what they've come to call dark data on Facebook. And it is a bit of an issue. And I think that Facebook is not being honest or open about how it is doing that. I think Google is better. Facebook is a sticking point because it has so much information, and we all know about the tracking cookies that it used to follow you around the internet because everyone's logged into Facebook, right? It's easy for them to do that. So anyway, that's my bit.
You know, I think I just wish everything could be like just rainbows and dancing in grass skirts. You know, sometimes I go around to my friend Lexi's house and we talk about unicorns, and she gets sparklers out and we play with sparklers. And the other day I was dropping balls into water so we could film them in slow motion and see how water fell out of the cup in slow motion. And to me, I just wish everything was like that so we don't have to care about any of this. Yeah. It'd be a lot easier to stay alive and be happy. But we don't live in that utopia. We do live in a great world, though, where James can send us thought-provoking emails as requested. So thank you very, very much, James, for those honestly very, very valuable insights. And we welcome anyone else to send in their thoughts on this or any other topic and provoke another debate. Maybe if we start getting loads of these sorts of things, we'll do a live debate show and we'll get some listeners on, and we'll bash it out on a topic once a quarter or something. Anyway, you can do all that by sending a message to hello@techpodcast.uk. Let's check in with Tom, who has got some updates for us on the other goings on this week in the tech world. Tom.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Patrick Beja tells us how significant it will be if Google announces its own gaming streaming service at GDC March 19th. You heard Nate's hands-on with the Samsung Galaxy S10, but we also look at the rest of the lineup, the accessories, and what it all means for Samsung. We have a rousing discussion of whether Apple offering its own credit card is a bad sign, and Eric Olander helps us bust some Western stereotypes about tech in China. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
And thank you to our patrons supporting us every week. If you're not a patron and like to get our ad-free extended versions, high-quality MP3s, you get our as-live version as well, and edited if you wish, head to patreon.com/UKTech. Help us finish February with one more patron than we had last month, or if we're already in March when you listen to this, maybe end up finishing March with one more patron than we had this month that we're recording this message in.
Yes, and send us comments as well. We want to hear from you. It's hello@techpodcast.uk. You can follow us on Twitter. It's @textmessagepod. We'll keep you up to date with the most important UK-focused technology headlines throughout the week. And thanks to everyone listening on our free ad-supported version. If you take a minute to review us on iTunes, that's the best way of supporting us without spending a penny.
It certainly is. And so from me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
We'll see you in a week.
Did you notice how I'm really trying hard to crash your your name now so that I don't have, there's no gap, because it drives me up the wall. I don't know why, am I slightly slow? I mean, does my brain not function properly? Because every time I listen to it, I'm like, why is that gap so big?
That's by the by. Also by the by is the fact that my dog just came in, farted, and has now gone out. So thanks.
That is...
thanks for that. Thanks, Bruce. That
was some smart Brucing there.
Please? You stink. Go. That way. He's come back in for another squirt. Right.
Filthy beast.
That'll teach me for not closing the door.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.